meeting is now being recorded.
Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening. Welcome to the new GTLD Subsequent Procedure Subteam Track 2 Legal Regulatory Issues held on the 18th of May 2017. In the interest of time, there will be no roll call. Attendance will be taken by the Adobe Connect room. If you are only on the audio bridge, could you please let yourself be known now? Thank you. Hearing no names, I would like to remind all participants to please state your name before speaking for recording purposes, and to please keep your phones and microphones on mute when not speaking to avoid any background noise. With this, I will turn it over to our co-chair, Phil Buckingham. Please begin.
Hello, everyone, and yes, good evening from a cold, wet UK. Good morning to Japan and Australia. Good afternoon, all of you that are in America and Canada. So for the record, this is Phil Buckingham, co-chair of TU. It's the 18th of May, 2017, 2100 UTC. So the call tonight, vertical separation and vertical integration. The format we're going to take tonight is as follows. We're going to have a talk, a chat, discussion for the first 30 minutes, and we'll be looking at, in this order, origins of vertical separation, the status quo in 2017, the potential concerns and benefits of vertical integration, the journey to the current status, and then finally, the registrar code of conduct and exemption. The second half will be an open discussion. So I'd particularly appreciate your registry and registrar experiences to deal with vertical integration and separation. And the use you made of specification 9 and specification 13 and the mitigations that was used to deal with. So while we're talking for the first 30 minutes, I'd like you to think about the questions you want to ask. And the way I want to do it is, if you wanted to ask a question, put it in chat, put it into the chat, and then Michael will obviously, he's going to handle the chat tonight, so he can read them out in due course. That's the format we're going to do. I'm just going to lob out sort of the key points and key questions that I've kind of scribbled down to get the juices going kind of thing. And then we'll get on to the admin side of things before we kick this all off. So these are the kind of questions I've written down, about six questions here. So firstly, do we need to reopen this whole VI issue? Quite frankly, the leadership team, we've been discussing this, and we feel that we can't revisit it from scratch, go back to the old way of vertical separated markets. There's no chance. So then the next question is we've got to ask ourselves, what efforts have we made to mitigate the harms and the concerns? And do they work now? Have they worked? Because obviously back in 2012, before we had the round one, there were many, many people that were dead against this whole VS issue and didn't want to open it all up. If we didn't mitigate these harms, why? What can we do to change that? Equally, if we didn't realise the benefits, you know, why and what can we do to make sure that these happen for round two? Has there been registrar discrimination? Are you aware of this? If you work for a registrar, what's happening out there? And of course, the other issue is the dot brands. They clearly don't need a registrar. So therefore, a lot of them, have got exemptions from the code of conduct, which is spec 9. And there we are. So I now would like to go, Emily, Steve, it's possible. Could we go to the last slide, which is basically the questions, so that people look at those questions and then think about them so that as we go through the talk, they can we can have an open second half, basically. That's my thinking to go about this. So, yeah, so here we go. So these are the questions that we put together right at the end. So if we could go through those and you can think about those, some of them overlap with what I've just said, and then we can address those later. So, yeah, so here we go. So does the working group agree with the assumptions in the previous slide? Okay, well, you haven't seen the previous slide. So has the registry code of conduct been effective in mitigating the potential concerns about relaxing the registrar separation requirement? Has the registry code of conduct hampered the ability of registries or registrars from taking advantage of the potential benefits from the relaxed requirements? Does the registry code of conduct need to be adjusted? And finally, are the mechanisms for exemptions to the registry code of conduct sufficient? So maybe we can leave that up there for a couple of minutes and you can read through it and think about it. What's your views are on it, and then we'll kick into the issue to do with the meeting. So yeah, so maybe should we give it to 20 seconds or something so you can think about it a little bit, and then so we'll kick on with the second part of the agenda. Yeah. So okay. So let's kick off with the second part of the agenda, which is the meeting times and outstanding topics. Now, basically, I think you're aware that work practitioners have some pretty hefty, chunky issues that we're dealing with, and quite frankly, we're kind of behind, to be honest with you. And we've still got some pretty major topics to deal with, and we need to get those going and at least get some discussion going on all of them before Johannesburg, which is, I think, in about 5 weeks, is it now? So so basically, what we're going to suggest is that we're going to call the same time every week between now and Johannesburg. Now, I realise that everybody's giving up valuable time. They could be doing lots of better other things, but I don't know if that's, if you guys find that acceptable, or does that create a huge problem for everybody? Maybe you could put your comments in the chat and see what you think. Why are you putting your comments in the chat? These are the topics that we've still got to cover. Basically, today we're doing obviously registrar non-discrimination, registrar separation. I think Michael and I were going to carry on with that next week on spec 13 and 9. Then we've also got to do registrar standardisation, which quite frankly I don't know what that actually is, TLD rollout, contractual compliance, and global public interest. Now, I know that global public interest, from my experience in the CCWG, is a nightmare, quite frankly. So I think that's a big headache. So that's what we've got. We've really got to get this all back on track so we can get all those topics covered by Johannesburg. What do people think? Hello? Hello, can you hear me?
We can hear you, sir.
Oh, sorry, somebody in the chat that muffled. Sorry, I'm incredibly bad reception here. So, right. So, is that acceptable to the group that we have to call for the next, every week for the next 4 weeks? Okay, so, I'm sorry I'm a bit muffled. I can't do any better than this, I'm afraid. So as Jeff said in the chat, we're going to have a meeting every week same time, 21 under UTC for the next 4 weeks. And as I say, we'll put out a list of the topics that we've still got to cover, and we'll put it on the main space. Okay, so let's get on to the business of the day. And, could we pull up the first slide, please? So everybody can, hello, can you hear me? Hello?
I can hear you, Phil. Would you like me to dial out to you?
Sorry, everybody can hear me properly. Sorry, I'm getting stuff in the chat, but people can't hear me again.
So you go, this is Jeff, you go in and out. Sometimes you're kind of muffled, but right now you are okay. So keep going.
Okay, right, I'll carry on. I really apologize about it. Okay, so introduction here. So as I was talking earlier, we basically, the leadership team basically thinks that there's no way we can go back to vertical separation and kickstart it all from scratch. But maybe some of you disagree, and maybe you're against this whole vertical integration issue, and you'd like to revisit the whole thing, but obviously that would, quite frankly, that would delay the whole process for around two, in my opinion. It would have to create a new PDP on it. So, yeah, so can we go on to the next slide, please, then? So, as I said, as I'm pointed out before. So that's the agenda for tonight. So if we could click on the next slide, please, and let's start looking at the DRS vertical separation. So here we go. So the idea of vertical separation, I'll spill through it quite quickly. So basically, I guess a lot of you that have been around as long as I have, you know all these, what's been happening. These are the key issues. So Network Solutions is originally able to sell .com, .net, and .org domains directly as both a registry and a registrar, adding competition at the retail level, i.e. registrars, and was a principle embedded in ICANN's founding documents. In 1999, NSI Solutions signed an agreement with ICANN to allow for equal access to all ICANN accredited registrars. Further, Network Solutions was required to establish ownership separation of its registry business and its registrar business. Now, this was later modified to structural separation. The original goal of separation, i.e. vertical separation, was to support competition at the retail registrar level. This principle was applied to each of the 2000 and the 2004-05 registry rounds, which obviously incorporated .biz, .info, .museum, .name, .travel, .movie. Section Maker .pro, which had a common ownership at the time with registrar.com. So can we scroll to the next, continue with this, the history? So the status quo in 2007, when round one kicked off, was basically there was a ratification 19 of the GNSO policy authorizing the GTRD process states registries must use only ICANN accredited registry in registering domain name and may not discriminate among such accredited registrars. That's the key piece. The GNSO Council determined that new GTR policies do not provide any guidance regarding the proper approach to cross-ownership and vertical integration, but instead implicitly suggest that the status quo be left in place. Status quo at a point in time, generally speaking, meant that registries were prohibited from owning more than 15% of a registrar, and that registrar cannot serve their own GLTD. In addition, registries were required to provide non-discriminatory access to registry services for all registrars. Now, it continues. Although registries were prohibited from owning more than 15% of a registrar, registrars were not prohibited from owning registries. With new registrars coming forward stating they were going to apply for new GTLDs, the community felt that something had to be done which applied to registries and registry groups. Okay, so we're going to move that on to the next slide. We can punch our way through this. Miss that one out for a minute? I'll come back to that, the harms and the benefits. Scroll forward to the, yeah. So the journey continued. So in October 2008, there was a CRA report. This is an economic research report commissioned by ICANN, suggesting that rules could be relaxed, but to do so in a conservative manner, e.g. allow VI, virtual integration, for single organization TLDs, allow VI, but registrars cannot serve registries that owned it or is owned by it. In September 2009, the GNSI Council requested an issue report, and staff recommended that the GNSO not initiate a PDPA on vertical integration at the time, and it's waited until the law after the launch of new TLDs. However, this recommendation was primarily based on timing concerns. Then in 2010, the GNSI Council initiated a PDP, and despite the staff recommendations, the GNSI Council chose to initiate the PDP. However, the council resolved that the working group must deliver its final report within 16 weeks of the Gateway Resolution. So if we can scroll up to the next one, so then it continues. The saga continues. So, yeah, then in March 2010, there was a meeting in Nairobi, and there was a resolution by the board. And they resolved that there would be strict separation of registries, also acting as registrars and vice versa, unless the GNSO establishes policy prior to the launch of the new GTLD program. That policy would then be considered by the board for adoption. So then in 2010, the PDP working group publishes the initial report for public comment. There was some agreement on principles, including the importance of compliance. I remember that very, very well. Need for an exception procedure in the event of strict separation, specifically an exception for single registry, single user, what I call SRSU, to cover no agreement on the six proposed specific proposals were contained. There was no agreement on the six specific proposals contained in the report. And actually, I was involved in this whole process. I don't know, Jeff was, and we had complete deadlock on these six proposals. And we couldn't get to it anyway. So in August 2010, the PDP Working Group publishes an updated initial report. Taking into account public comment, updated report was published. And still, there was no agreement on any proposal. Right, so then quickly flipping through in the next one. We're nearly there. Please. Hello? Thanks. Okay, so then in September 2010, there was a board resolution. The board determined that if the GNSO was unable to reach consensus on VI issues, the board itself would make determinations necessary. And then in November 2010, there was a board resolution. The GNSO did not reach consensus. I remember that distinctly. As a result, the board cross-ownership would be allowed complete reversal of the Nairobi resolution. However, it stipulated mitigating requirements, including the development of a registry.
Hey, Phil, this is Jeff.
Phil, looks like we lost you.
Yeah, Phil, are you there? Can everyone hear me? This is Jeff Newman.
Jeff, we can hear you. His line's still connected. I'm not sure what happened. I'll check.
Okay, so should we, maybe I'll just continue where he left off, hopefully, and then he can catch up. So to summarize the slide, essentially, in November 2010, as Phil was starting to say, the GNSO did not reach any consensus in that vertical integration working group, and the board, contrary to what it said it was going to do in Nairobi earlier that year, reversed its thinking and decided to allow cross-ownership or vertical integration, but it stipulated that there should be mitigating requirements, including the development of a registry code of conduct. That went through a number of iterations after November 2010 when it was first added to the applicant guidebook. You can go to the next slide. So that was version 5 of the guidebook. Sorry, just waiting for the next slide to come up. There we go. So the registry code of conduct was added as specification 9 to the agreement, and some of the more pertinent parts of that code of conduct included things like separate books and records and you have to file a certification every year if you are an integrated entity, et cetera. We're not really going to talk too much about the code of conduct specification 9 or the other exemptions on this call, but we are going to be talking about those subjects in detail on the next call next week. But there, just to go over it a little bit, there's an exemption request process for in specification 9 for the code of conduct, and some rules that basically say you cannot have a code of conduct exemption if it's a generic string, and there's some words about that, and you also have to have all domain name registrations in the TLD registered to and maintained by the registry operator for the exclusive use of registry operator or its affiliates. You have to certify that you're not going to sell, distribute, or transfer control or use of any registrations in the TLD to any third party that is not an affiliate. And the third element, which is a little bit more subjective, which is that the application of the code of conduct is not necessary to protect the public interest. And there are quite a number of code of conduct exemptions, and I think we have the statistics on a later slide. But subsequent to that, as most people know, specification. Phil, is that you back on? Nope. Okay. Specification 13 was added, and among other things, it provides yet another exemption to the code of conduct. And, of course, you have to qualify under Specification 13, which is essentially you must be a brand TLD. And I know I'm kind of short-circuiting. It's a lot more nuances than that, but for right now, it grants an exception to the code of conduct. However, this is important to know, even if you are granted an exemption to Specification 9, whether it's through Specification 9 itself, or through Specification 13. So if you're granted an exemption to the Code of Conduct, you must still comply with Sections 2.8 and 2.9 of the Registry Agreement, which deal with non-discrimination of registrars and equal access to registrars for registration services or for registry services. You can go on to the next one. And just let me know, Phil, when you're on. So here's some examples of TLDs that have been granted a code of conduct exemption under Specification 9. There's .Broadway, .Office, which is Microsoft. We have .LDS, .Living, .. et cetera. And you could see some of the statistics there at that link that's on the site right now. And specification 13, some of the more recent ones include Bauhaus, GMX, SBI, and a whole host of others that can be found at that link that's at the bottom of that bullet. Great. Thanks, Steve, for posting the link so people can click on it. Want to go to the next slide? Okay, actually, now it's probably a good idea to go back to the slide that we skipped, a few slides back on the harms and the benefits. Okay, so we're on slide, the slide that has the number 3 on top, so slide 6. So these are just a few of the concerns that were expressed during the time when this subject was being debated between 2008 and 2010, essentially. Well, and even beyond when we're discussing the code of conduct and what should be in the agreement. So those that were worried about vertical integration believed that vertical integration could hamper competition at the retail level as a result of consolidating both the registry and registrar functions. There was a fear that registries or vertically integrated entities would provide better services to their registrars than to the other registrars that were offering or wanted to offer the TLD. There was a concern that compliance would be incredibly complex to measure, and for many of you that remember back when Network Solutions first, then VeriSign, was vertically integrated, they had an entire department, Office of Compliance, I think they called it, it was a lot of work to ensure the structural separation, and of course ICANN didn't have the resources to do the types of audits that perhaps many were concerned needed to be done. So there was a lot of concern at the time that there would be incredibly difficult audit functions that were needed. There was also a thought at the time that domain tasting could be made easier. That was really kind of a result of, or another way of saying, that registries could have information from its own registrar that other registrars were not granted or that other registrars could not receive. So by virtue of having more information from its own registrar as well as information about other registrars, it could take advantage of that situation. And ultimately, it was thought that too much consolidation could impact registrant choice. On the plus side, the benefits, people were saying vertically integrated entities could allow for economies of scale and essentially provide cheaper prices, more innovation, and ultimately you could pass those benefits on to consumers. There was registries could also be their own distribution channel, whereas if you remember at the time, there were some small registries that were sponsored registries that were finding it very difficult to find registrars to carry their domains because they were niche domains and very particular. So domains like .museum and some of the other smaller sponsored TLDs were fighting for registrar attention to sell their domains, but registrars, because of market conditions, either didn't want to carry those or just felt like it wouldn't be good for their business to carry those. And so there was, the benefit of being vertically integrated would allow you to carry your own and not have to depend to rely solely on other entities. And then there was a notion in that report, the economic report in 2008, that said that it would be helpful to be integrated, especially if you were what was then called a single user single registry model, which now fits into, you know, the brand model essentially, where, you know, you're going to have a limited registrant base because it's only your own entity, and, you know, which registrars are actually going to want to carry your domain if you're just giving it for free, let's say, to your own company. So there was certainly, that was viewed as a potential benefit of vertical integration. So now going back to the slides, going back to the discussion slide, or the assumption slide, I should say. Sorry for jumping around. So the assumption we and the leadership team made, as Phil said earlier, is that it's, you know, vertical integration is now a reality. The doors open, the trains left the station, and, you know, even despite the fact that there was never GNSO consensus developed policy on the subject. And, you know, some of the complexities, as you can imagine, of saying, well, let's start from scratch and maybe we'll end up with there should be no vertical integration. We would then have to deal with, okay, what do we do for the legacy registries and registrars? How would we even begin to take that apart? It just seemed to us as a pretty much an impossibility. But again, that's an assumption we're making. And so the very first question I'll ask after I finish this slide is, you know, does everyone agree with that assumption? In addition, we the leadership team believe that, you know, it would be difficult to close up the existing exemptions to the code of conduct. You know, we can talk about whether those exemptions serve the right purpose, or whether there needs to be additional exemptions to the code of conduct. And so really ultimately, as we say in that last bullet, you know, our intention is not to start from scratch, but really work on modifications that allow us to realize the benefits that we were supposed to realize from vertical integration, while at the same time mitigating any concerns that have arisen from vertically integrated entities. So given all of that and going to the next slide, I think I want to stop here to see if there's any thoughts on those assumptions. We would ultimately, even though this is the leadership view, we would ultimately like to hear from the working group, because really this is your working group, and we just want to know that we're starting from the right basis. So I'll open it up to see if anyone's got any comments, questions about what we went over. Okay, seeing no one with hands, why don't we try to do a polling mechanism? So if we go back, go back one slide again. Sorry about this. I know ICANN staff wants to kill me right now. These assumptions, can I see people either with a green check mark or an X if you agree, a green check, if you disagree with an X on the assumptions that are here? All right, come on. Okay, wait, Kathy's got a question while people are putting up green and X's. Kathy, please.
Thanks, Jeff. Kathy Kleinman, and I was wondering what the, since I haven't followed vertical integration since the working group, what, and I find I can't vote because I don't know the answer to the question, have there been any serious abuses? Is there, I remember we had all sorts of crazy scenarios at one point, or not so crazy, that pricing, that a registry could price at $1 million a domain name, and that would make it, and only their registrars basically could sell because that $1 million would then go back into the pocket of the registry because it's a joint entity. What are we seeing in terms of pricing? What are we seeing in terms of abuse of that registry-registrar relationship? There should be audits by now. I believe there were Chinese walls. There were separations, but I don't remember. You know, were they observed? What's going on? Has there been anything flagrant? Thanks.
Yeah, thanks, Kathy.
So, Kathy, Jeff, you take the floor. Go ahead.
Yep, I was just going to say, thanks, Michael. I was just going to say, Kathy, great questions.
I think a couple thoughts come to mind when you ask that. First, and Jim Pendergast asked this question a little bit earlier in the chat. You know, first we should get the statistics of how many integrated entities there are, and I think ICANN's got that because they get certifications every year from vertically integrated entities. But also to address your questions in particular, we should see if there are any, if there have been any complaints filed with either with compliance or otherwise that relate to an entity that's vertically integrated, more specifically about the fact that they're integrated. And also we should check to see if that's one of the items that ICANN does audit when they do audits of registries, and they do that every year. They look at a certain subset of registries to see if that's something that they ask questions on or something that they check to see if they have any information like what you've asked. But I think, as Christina says, more important really is to see if there's been any complaints with compliance on that. So any other questions? And now I'm also going to take a look and see if Phil's back on and Phil wants to take back over. Okay, not hearing Phil. Michael, you wanted to say something?
Jeff, you said exactly what I was going to say. Thanks.
Oh, okay, sorry. All right, well, it seems like there's a bunch of check marks up there. Is there anyone that disagrees, subject, of course, to finding out the answers to the questions that Kathy has asked? At this point, does...
Jeff, we have Alexander Schubert has a negative mark in his... that's a step away. Sorry. That's a step away. Sorry. No, it's not. They're pretty close.
Yeah, so that's a do not disturb. John asks the question, Jeff, do you have an opinion about the picket fence? John, you want to expand about that? I'm not sure what your question is.
Sure. Jeff, can you hear me?
Yep, great. Yep.
Yeah, I asked a question earlier, if there's an opinion from you or ICANN staff, legal staff, I guess, whether vertical integration issues are within the fence. And I asked that because if they are and subject to consensus policy, then that's one thing. If they're not, then you have 1,200 registries that wouldn't be bound by any of this, so why would we even bothered talking about it?
Okay, thanks, John. I think within the picket fence would apply to the registries that have already signed agreements, but not necessarily apply to what we can discuss on a going forward basis. So I guess you're right,
right
on that. It's a good question. I think perhaps we can look at what the ICANN staff found when we initially did the 2010 PDP or 2009 PDP to see what, because they're supposed to give an opinion on whether it's in the picket fence. That's a good question.
Yeah, really whether it's in the picket fence in the new registry agreement. So their opinion in 2010 probably didn't matter. The question is whether it's – and Alan has a recollection. I don't recall what it was, and I guess we could just look it up as well. But it seems like an easy – if it's not in the picket's fence, it's an easy answer that if you can have 1,200 entities that are – that could be vertically integrated, would we really say folks in the next round wouldn't be able to?
Yeah, thanks, John. I think that's we'll research that, and I think it's a good question. Though I don't think anyone, unless there's people raising their hands now, and I'll get to them.
but I don't think anyone here is saying that we should not allow vertical integration going forward. I think that's one of the assumptions I was trying to see if people agreed with on this call. But let's take that question back, do the research, and come back.
Before we voted, I thought that was an important issue to figure out.
Jeff, I think Alan Greenberg might want to address that. I'm not sure. That and Rubens has a new topic to introduce. So.
Okay, thanks, Michael. So, Rubens, do you have a comment on this, or should I go to Alan?
Thank you. I haven't looked at the current contract. I know at the time the registry contract was proposed, vertical integration was very much explicitly added as within the picket fence. Whether it's there or not doesn't really alter what we say going forward in the future, other than we're worried than to the extent we're worried about level playing fields. But in any case, that was the putting it within the picket fence, if I remember correctly, and I'm pretty sure it was the one escape hatch the board did provide for saying, yes, we're unilaterally deciding this, and it is an irreversible path, but we will put it within the picket fence, so it's subject to consensus policy. So certainly that was the decision at that time. I doubt it would have been reversed in the iterations that followed, but I haven't looked at today's contract. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks, Alan. And we'll go back between this meeting and next week and do some research, have hopefully a more definitive answer for John and for the group. Rubens.
Thank you, Jeff. Can you hear me?
Yeah, thank you.
Thanks. I want to comment on one thing about the current 2012 round system. That it actually allows the registry itself, not a registry that's owned by the same legal entity, but the same registry legal entity to also register domains. But the issue that is limited to 100 domains. Those 100 domains can be registered by the registry to fit its promotional and development purpose. And it only says that, oh, this registry must obey the RIA requirements for those domains. So we actually have two types of vertical integration now. One is the one for the 100 domains and one for the others. The point I wish to make is that although there is the capability of a registry to have a different legal entity as a registrar, that really doesn't work for smaller markets because the cost of setting up a registrar usually can be recouped by operating a GTLD registrar, at least for your own domains, and sometimes even if you had all GTLDs on Earth, you could recoup those costs for smaller markets. And what we are seeing in markets like Africa, South America, the so-called Global South, is that CCTLDs keep ruling the landscape, the domain landscape, and not new GTLDs are not getting traction. One point to add is that although there is a requirement to only use ICANN-accredited registrars, there is no must-carry requirement for registrars. So registrars are free to pick and choose which TLDs they want to carry. So the concept I'm trying to introduce is the idea of us establishing a ceiling up to until a registry might use the same system that we use today as for the 100 domains, but we are ceiling that says, a registrar usually doesn't get interest in a TLD that has, let's say, only 10,000 registrations or only 1,000 registrations or any number that suits the registrar, that makes registrars happy, that say, oh, this TLD I usually wouldn't like to carry anyway, so I don't have a problem. The registry marketing itself, that mechanism could be useful for underserved regions, could be used for community TLDs as well, because some community TLDs have registration restrictions that tie them enough, so they have essentially the same problem. So it wouldn't be tied to a geography or to an ICA region or anything that could be gained, but instead to a clear objective metric that would be the number of registrations. So that's the concept I like to float around within the work track and see what people think. Thank you.
Thanks, Ruben. And you're right that the element that's contained in it's in specification 5 that deals with the promotional and operational names is a separate kind that we didn't actually think about on here, but it is certainly a form of vertical integration. I see Christina has a check mark. I'm not sure if that's a leftover one or if that's a new check mark. Right, so if you all take a look at registry reports that are published by ICANN, that are filed by registries and published 3 months after they are numbered, their registrar number or IANA ID number 9998. So you can see how many each registry has of these operational or promotional names. And then while Rubens was talking, John Nevitt went back and looked at the language in specification 1, and cross-ownership of registries and registrars is specifically mentioned in section 1.2.6, that cross-ownership or vertical integration is one of the items in the picket fence or in the definition of consensus policies. So again, I will throw out the question, is there anyone that disagrees with the assumptions that the leadership team has proposed? Okay, so then moving on to the next questions, and again, this is not just a topic we'll bring up once, you know, we have to, and it's not a decision that we're making, it's just assumptions for now. But of course we can choose to revisit at a later time. So can we go to the questions on slide 13? So I guess this is sort of getting at Kathy's questions, that, you know, has anyone on this call noticed, the question is, has the Registry Code of Conduct been effective in mitigating the concerns that we talked about earlier about relaxing the registry-registrar separation requirements? So in general, what does everyone think about the code of conduct? And Kathy asks, are there any registrars on the call? And I do see some, though I will not single them out. Or any non-registrars? Okay, Christina says, I don't think we can answer this without compliance data. I think it's important to get that data. That's correct. That's true. I'm just throwing the question out there to see if anyone has had some thoughts. Okay, Michael says we have not seen any problems, but agree with Christina that we need to get the data, which we will get. The next question that we thought about was, okay, on the other side, there were some strong benefits that were mentioned, especially if you go back and read that report, the CRA report, which hopefully someone can get a link in the chat or certainly send out with the notes of this meeting. But it basically said that vertically integrated entities can achieve economies of scale and a number of benefits by controlling the distribution channel. And the question then is, okay, does this code of conduct, does any registry believe or registrar believe that this code of conduct has hampered their ability to take advantage of those potential benefits? In other words, you know, having a vertically, I'll throw something controversial out. Again, just as a chair, not that I believe this, but there are some, and if you read that Cray report, the economic report, it is possible that an equal access requirement, in other words, a requirement to treat all registrars equally, goes against the whole notion of achieving the economies of scale that you can with the vertical integration. In other words, if you look at, let's say, a grocery store, right, they control, some of them not only sell other products on their shelves, but they also sell their own products, like a Costco in the U.S. sells Kirkland brand materials, or lots of different retail chains sell their own branded materials. They don't have any requirement to treat all of the other products that they carry or any other retailer. There's no requirement for them to treat everyone the same. There's no requirement that they provide equal access. And it's thought that those types of arrangements are truly what allows one to achieve economies of scale and efficiencies, but requiring that you have, that you allow everyone into your distribution channel, and then requiring that you treat them all the same as you would treat your own, could, in theory, go against the whole notion of economies of scale. So throw that question out there. Again, we'll be talking about this topic for a few weeks, but it's something to think about going forward. Rubens, Steve actually posts the Cray report up there. It's good reading from back in 2008, 2009. And Rubens says, what I heard from folks at Integrated Registries that they had, that had a registrar, but registry was their primary business, is that following the equal access was so complex they saw no advantage in being one. They, in effect, sold their registrar business sometime after. So that's an interesting, it would be great to hear, Rubens, from those entities directly if they were willing to make those statements, and more specifically, what were the, what about the equal access requirements were so complex? What could they not do that they wanted to do to achieve their efficiencies? And I'm not going to mention any names, but Phil has posted one integrated entity. The next question is, so if we believe that the code of conduct has either not been as effective as it could, or whether it has not allowed registries to take advantage of the supposed benefits of integration, does the registry code of conduct need to be adjusted? And so that's a question we need to think about in the coming weeks. And ultimately, are the mechanisms for the existing exemptions to the code of conduct sufficient? Should there be additional ones? And I think Rubens was getting at one I guess Rubens, what you were talking about would be an exemption to the code of conduct in addition to just those 100 names. Are there any other entities that should have those types of exemptions? So we are just at the top of the hour. Is there another slide? I don't think there is, but I could be wrong. Can we move to the next slide if there is one? Nope. Okay, that's it. So with that, I'll let you all go 3 minutes early, but please read the materials for the next call. That will be next week. Remember, we're doing weekly meetings now, same time next week. You should have an invite on your calendar, and the time it was just posted by Chile. Yep.
We are not doing weekly meetings. I want to change what is being said about that. We are doing weekly meetings for the next 3 weeks, and then we have one final meeting before the Johannesburg meeting. The reason we are doing this is because we have about five topics left that we need to cover before we reach Johannesburg. We need to talk about the vertical integration, which will hit the registrar non-discrimination issue, as well as the registrar separation issue. After that, we need to go through TLD rollout, through the compliance issues, as well as there is one last topic, and I'm just talking about this from the top of my head, but we have three topics that we're going to try to combine into two different meetings. That is why we have this week included. The next 2 weeks will also have a meeting. It's just this time, just this once. We don't expect to do this in the future. So this isn't going to be an every week schedule. Just wanted to correct that. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks, Michael. Appreciate it. And Phil, sorry you dropped off. Hopefully we can fix that for the next time. But that's it. We're at the top of the hour, so thank you, everyone.
Thanks, everyone. Thanks, Jeff, and sorry about Phil. Bye.
Today's meeting is adjourned. Please disconnect all lines. And to everyone, thank you, and have a fantastic day.